Welcome back to What Do You Do? My name is Orna Lyons, and in this series, I chat to people who work in the music business all about what they do and how they got their position. In this week's episode, I'm chatting to Tom Brunner. Tom works in TV promotions, also known as a TV plugger, and I'm so grateful that he agreed to chat with me because this job is such a rare one. Very fun and very interesting to talk about because I don't think that many people outside of the music world would even know about this job and what a TV plugger actually does. Tom began his career working at a major label in a marketing role at Warner Brothers, and like many people that I've spoken to in this series, he did a long internship before ending up in his current job working with Sarah Adams at Sassy Media. Sassy have an incredible roster of artists, people like Paloma Faith, Craig David, Jack Savaretti, and a couple of acts that I work with also, and they've worked on every UK TV show that you can possibly imagine. All the big and exciting ones like The Brits, Jules Holland, Sunday Brunch, Graham Norton, you name it, they've done it. In this chat, Tom and I talk about how he broke his way into the business, the changes in music telly over the past 10 years, and the impact and the difference that one key TV performance can make to an artist's career. So I hope you enjoy our chat. As usual, if you do, I'd love it if you leave a rating as it helps others find the podcast. Thanks, and here's Tom. All right, welcome to the podcast, Tom.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So first question I like to ask everybody is, what do you do?
I do, in the music industry, something called TV promotions. We're also called TV pluggers.
Okay.
Confusingly. And it's my job to get artists on the TV when they are releasing an album or doing a tour, something they're flogging, basically.
Brilliant. I'm so excited to speak to you because your job is one of those rare ones that I had no idea existed until I myself started working in the music industry. And it was like this realization, like, wait a second. So can you explain a bit about how do you get people on TV?
Effectively, whenever I say what my job is, people go, oh, so you're an agent.
Yeah.
And it is that kind of thing. We're not officially an agent, but it is that sort of job. We are a middle person between the artist and the labels and the managers on the TV side who make the music and the TV shows on the other side, the producers and all the people involved in making the TV. There's sort of two prongs to it. For newer artists, it's just getting anything you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any support on any TV show is a brilliant thing. Up to kind of the much bigger artists where you've got much less time with them and you need to maximise it as much as possible. So it's about quality, not quantity.
Gotcha.
And there's a lot of politics about certain shows won't follow other shows, which what I mean by that is once you do one show, it means there's a few others that go, no, we won't book that artist because they've already been on that. I really enjoy it. I mean, any job has its good and bad or frustrating points.
Mm-hmm.
That's unavoidable, whether it's in music, whether it's what you think is your dream job. But overall, it's pretty fantastic and I can't complain. You end up in lots of very, very privileged positions.
I'm sure you do.
With some very cool people. And I do sometimes have to...
Pinch yourself.
Remind myself because, you know, it can happen on a daily basis. And obviously some of them are scenarios that I, as a music fan, before getting into it, would have absolutely killed to be part of.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure we're going to speak about some of those kind of things in a bit. But first, I just want to ask you about how did you get into TV promo and how did you break your way into the music industry?
It's a funny one. As you say, I also had no idea about TV promo. And so it's split up, as you know, Orna, into different areas. So I only do TV. Radio pluggers just do radio. Then there's online and there's print and there's social media and people that cover each one specifically. For other types of entertainment, actors and people like that, they just have one PR person generally.
Yeah.
Who just takes care of it all. But because music needs so much attention, each different platform of media requires so much attention, you need a separate team for each of them. I had no idea about this job before getting into it. And I was, before I got into music, I was a waiter for a long time, became very good friends with the manager of the restaurant.
This is not the route in I was expecting.
It's not. It's not a normal
route. I love this.
It is, unfortunately, as is often the way with music, involves an introduction,
yeah,
which is always the hardest thing, mm-hmm. and it is often the thing that makes the difference. It's what made the difference with me. The lovely Patricia, who managed this restaurant, was very close friends with Sarah, who I now work with. Mm-hmm. And Sarah had been senior at Warner. She was the director of promotions and looked after the most incredible roster of artists over her career. And she'd set up independently. I got introduced to her, went up to meet her. She introduced me to 14th Floor Records that she shared an office with.
Yeah.
Christian Tattersfield, who went on to run the whole of Warner in the UK. It was his record label, Biffy Clyro, The Wombats, Ray LaMontagne, artists like that. And got some work experience. And I worked very hard.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And that work experience turned into an internship, which turned into a bit of a sort of long-term internship that wasn't quite a job. It's, you know, you do get caught in that middle ground.
Phase, yeah.
I had lots of wonderful people there who wanted me to stay and were trying to get me a job. And it was just taking so long. Mm-hmm. And just about the time that I got a little bit fed up. Not with the experience was wonderful. But again, being a music fan and being in a major label and getting offered tickets to every
big
gigs,
big shows.
Tickets and just, again, access to direct to the bands as well. You know, I was hanging out with Biffy Clyro, you know, it was mind-blowing for me.
And getting to watch essentially a private gig just for you when you're watching them record TV.
That is exactly it. And well, this was pre-TV, so this was, I should have mentioned that, this was in marketing.
This was
completely different. And so I did that for 6 months. But it was a great introduction because marketing, you see all aspects of the campaign, all the promo teams, the people I mentioned, the radio pluggers, the TV pluggers, the online press people all report into the marketing manager who then collates it all. So you get a complete overview of what everyone does. And marketing was a really, really good start.
It's a good way in.
Yeah.
You get to do a little bit of everything and suss it out a bit and see which bits you like best.
It was. But as you say, it's same thing as, you know, not in TV studios, but I was seeing those amazing, intimate, like competition winner gigs, those kind of things where there's only a couple of hundred people watching an enormous band. So that was really exciting. And then the amazing Sarah Adams, my work wife, was pregnant, and it was a little bit random. She came into the Warner office to say, I think she was just coming in to say hi to some people because she obviously still had lots of friends there. And I just heard her shouting across the office to me like, oh, did you get my email? And I hadn't, and I don't know what had happened with that, but it was a bit of a chance meeting that ended in her sort of saying she needed someone to come in and help while she was off having a baby.
Oh, wow. And so that's how it started with
that
her.
That was my first actual job in the music industry, yes.
And how long have you been with Sarah now, working with Sarah?
We've been working together for about, it's coming up to 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's coming up to 10 years.
So you could say a successful working relationship.
It very much is. And it began as, you know, her employing me as a very junior member of staff. And there was one other person that worked there at the time called Juliet. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the whole experience was great. And just slowly over the years, our working relationship has just sort of naturally shifted. We've never really had a conversation about where we both stand. Like, it's very much Sarah's company and she set it up. We'd see each other, I think, as
partners,
equal partners in it now. And that's it's been like that for a while, and it's a really lovely place to be. But no,
that sounds like a nice natural progression that it was, because you don't hear of many people staying in the one position or the one company for that long. And obviously you clearly aren't in the same role within that company, but that's so nice that it just evolved.
It's really nice that it evolved and that we didn't have to kind of have that conversation earlier on. Of course we did. It's like, oh, here you are, you know, and you get a pay rise and your job changes slightly, but the way it's naturally evolved has been really nice. And Sarah and I, we're very close. We have a really nice working relationship. It's very nice being independent, but still working for bigger labels. So we always had the opportunity to sort of not have to get involved in any internal politics, of which of which there can be, you know, obviously a lot. So keep our sort of independence, but also be able to go in to the majors and other labels and just have a bit of a sort of variety of people that you're working with. Every artist pretty much that we work with has a different team. And I always say every day is different. Mm-hmm. That's the best thing about the job.
Yeah.
One day you spend all day in a TV studio with someone. The next day you've got a load of meetings, but they're all over the place and you're, you know, hot footing around London. And then you've got the gigs and various times you'll find yourself in bizarre filming situations.
Well, that's the world of TV,
places.
Isn't it?
It is. And it's, and that's, you know, I was talking about the sort of pinch yourself moments. There are some of those that are, you know, a lot of fun. And so, yes, every day is different. That is what I would say is very
appealing.
Positive part of my job,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that appeals to a lot of people because you're not in an office 9 to 5, but sometimes you are. And there's an element of stability, but there's also change and variety. So if someone was trying to get into the TV plugging world, how would you advise that they get into it? You know, is it something that you can apply for, or does everybody have to do an internship, do you think?
I think it would be very hard to get into, I think, any job in music, from my experience,
yeah,
and people's journeys that I know, to not do some amount of free work. And I know that's not what people will always want to hear.
I know.
And because the worst thing is, even getting the free work is hard.
Yeah.
It's not like you can walk in somewhere and go, right, I'm here, you can use me.
Well,
for
the
3 months
of competition to get those kind of internships at Universal or Warner or Sony, it's huge.
It is huge, but it's, doesn't mean it's not possible.
Exactly.
You know, yes, a lot of people want it, but there are opportunities and there's lots of ways of going about it. I would say the old school way of literally going in and speaking to people, you know, going to the front desk and say hi. And, chances are, you know, you might not get anything from it. Drop in a CV, say hi. That person could have a conversation with someone more senior that day, and you just never know.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of it quite possibly often will be down to a bit of chance and timing and all of those things. But I think just the free work element is, I think, pretty unavoidable. I had to do it for 6 months. I had travel expenses paid.
It's a long time.
It is a long time,
yeah,
especially when you don't have, you know, parents who live in London or a place to stay or anything. You know, it was a struggle. It was tough, that 6 months, but it didn't feel tough because I was having such a good time.
Yeah, it is tough. And I think it's an annoying solution, but it's also, you kind of have to look at the long term of what you're doing it for and how much you really want to get in. Because, you know, I've talked to a few people now and it does seem like doing internships or offering to work for free in the first stage is kind of one of the only ways in.
I think it is. And I know I've mentioned going in and going old school and trying to meet people in any way you possibly can, but also looking through the usual channels of looking for a job. Keep an eye on the websites. Find out who the entertainment recruitment people are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And often they will just give you advice as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And no one's brought that up yet, that there are music job websites. There are websites that you can go on, like Music Week that has a job section, or Music Business Worldwide. And there are a few websites. So I will leave the links to those in the show notes, because there are places where you can go solely for entertainment jobs.
But also, you know, we get emails quite a lot from people who've just Googled all possible independent agencies for all promo
companies.
All promo companies, saying they'd like to get into music and do you have any opportunities? And there have been a couple of times where we have thought about needing someone and then received an email and considered it.
Yeah.
And it hasn't ended up happening. The way we operate now, we really streamlined the whole thing. And for a long time, we did have a temp, someone there to support us.
Yeah.
But the job has changed somewhat over the last, certainly 5 or 6 years, but the whole time I've been doing it, with physical being less of a focus and everything going a bit more digital, we used to have to do a lot of stuff like mail outs. Every time you had a single or an album release, you'd have to mail it out to however many, 100 contacts, you know, producers in
TV. It's funny how much that has changed in such a short time. I'm the same, because I began working at a radio promo company, but half the office was envelopes and CDs. Half the office. And now it's like, when do you get a CD?
Never. And we stopped sending them out a while ago. I think some people carried on, but I just spoke to a few people going, do you want them? And sometimes, you know, they did want them just so they had them there. Also, you know, some of them listened to them and then gave them to their nan or whatever, you know, and that's some people liked it. But it was that list was dwindling dramatically. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't bring myself to send out 100 pieces of plastic that weren't going to get used.
True, true. Very eco. We got to be eco. So you mentioned that you work for lots of different labels, lots of different teams. So who are you currently working with?
Currently, we have Craig David, who is signed to Insanity, which is part of Sony. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we've got a Craig single that's out now that we'll be promoting over the next few weeks or probably a couple of months. And then he'll have something else coming after that. And we also work with Paloma Faith.
Love Paloma.
Yeah, we love Paloma.
She's great. I imagine she must be a dream to work with TV-wise because she's such a big personality.
Paloma's great. And we've worked with her from the start. So we've been there since before the first album and been part of the whole journey, which has been amazing.
So cool.
And to be retained for that period is also humbling.
Yeah.
That people still want to work with you when she's a number of albums in. She's just released her fourth album.
Yeah, it says a lot.
It's really nice. And she's actually just wrapped up promo on this album. She's focusing on acting for a little while, but there'll, you know, no doubt be more music soon enough. We worked with Jack Savaretti, who's just had a number one album.
Yeah, love Jack.
Just did Wembley.
No big deal. Tiny little thing.
Casual, brush it off. Yes, and obviously we work with Gabrielle Aplin and Hannah Grace.
Oh, yeah, just those two.
With the lovely Orna.
Yeah.
And various artists. And previously we've worked with Muse, Jennifer Lopez, Blondie, that was cool.
Brilliant. Such a wide variety of stuff. Does that help when it's different types of music? Does that mean you can get them on different types of shows?
It does. It does mean you can get them on different types of shows. There are the bulk of TV these days, and it has changed a lot. The landscape has changed a lot since I've been doing the job. But in terms of the main entertainment shows, you know, they are looking for mostly recognisable names that you'll find on the radio on playlist, but it is nice having different artists to work, because whether it's, you know, an urban act or a dance act, there are different outlets that you're speaking to, and that's always going to make it more interesting. But it's also nice literally just working a variety of music. There have been periods where I'd say for no particular reason we've ended up being pigeonholed into certain genres.
Yeah.
And it's never lasted that long. There's a little period that happens, and we get all these artists that are, you know, not dissimilar or sit in a different place, certainly on TV. But then all of a sudden we'll start getting ones from over here. And it is nice when you've got a bit of a mix at the same time.
Keeps it fresh.
Yeah.
Can a person, band or artist, can they get booked for a TV show without a TV plugger?
I mean, yes. If you knew where to go,
you don't sound sure.
No, I had to think about my response to that one. I mean, my value as a TV plugger is my relationships with the shows. So there are some acts, Paloma, for instance, for a long time, you know, we had to really battle for every telly. Mm-hmm. Every telly was a battle. And we didn't really understand why at times, but it just happens like that sometimes. But we got there every time, and that was great. And now she's
being approached.
Everyone wants her. She's massive. So it's not securing the TVs. There are still some where it's tricky, because you have to work around availability. And she might have already done a load of TVs earlier in the campaign, which mean they're like, oh, she's already done this and that and that, which means it's not as exclusive for us now. So it's not a given that you can just walk onto every telly. But the challenge definitely moves from, can we get Graham Norton, to yes, can we get it, but also when do we want it, how is it going to look, all these things, you know. It becomes
a bit more strategic, that you're not just trying to secure any and everything that you can get. You're actually trying to make a difference to the campaign, or
absolutely
have the telly when it's going to make a difference to her album sales.
That's it. And in answer to your question before, that I guess I was leading up to, was it's our job to, with our relationships with TV people, to make sure it all works. The campaign gets put together, everyone's happy, TV people are happy, management are happy. You know, our conversations with certain producers can go on for months before you get a booking.
Sure, that's fun.
And it's you know, it can go on for months, you know, these conversations. And that obviously can be frustrating at times, but equally when it happens, it's the greatest feeling when you get that TV that makes a difference.
Yeah.
It's really There's a lot of satisfaction when that happens in this job.
What are some of the fun ones that you enjoy doing, fun TV shows?
Again, it all really depends on what the opportunity is. For instance, when we got Jack Savaretti on Graham Norton for the first time, he's now done three, which is brilliant. It was a really huge moment for him as an artist. So that specific TV, so joyful, and everyone was so happy and just loving that he'd sort of gone up to the next level.
Yeah.
And the team are really lovely.
It kind of feels like certain TVs bring you to the mainstream, and once you kind of get on them, it's like there's no going back. You've been on Graham Norton. It's kind of like UK, here's Jack Savaretti.
Yes, that is very true. Until then, you're not again. So it's definitely a bit of a roller coaster journey in terms of it's up and down. Once you've done that, and when Jack got that first Graham Norton, absolutely. And he also did the One Show around the same time. So two really big shows that did put him up onto that next level, and everything followed from that. But there are other artists where, you know, it might be that they had one great record and that's what got it. And then it doesn't, the next one doesn't quite get the radio or doesn't get the press, and then people need a bit more convincing. Mm-hmm. If an artist has got a, you know, just had a top 10 hit, they've got a song that's right high up in the airplay charts and they're all over the press, that makes our job an awful lot easier to convince people to have them on. Everyone wants someone who's hot, you know, someone who's immediately going to be recognised by the people watching the show.
Yeah. The industry has changed so much with streaming, online, but TV and radio are still those more traditional forms of media that there are kind of those gatekeepers that still exist there.
Absolutely. I couldn't have put it better myself. It's a relatively small group of people. It's still obviously a lot of people. Every show has a huge number of people working on it. But the people that we have dialogue with...
Mm-hmm. The people booking the acts.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same names. And even when someone moves on from somewhere, it's generally someone that you know who goes into their place. So it is that. It is a relatively small group of people that we speak to try and help get these decisions made. And that's tough because I know, particularly with online press, there's, you know, there's Submit Hub, isn't there? And these things that you can pitch out to online press. And
You can email an editor at a blog. Yeah. And there's not a huge chance, but there's a good chance you could get your music if they like it. But I think the idea of inviting someone on a TV show is such a big thing that I guess you rarely see the kind of lesser well-known acts or new acts even.
That's tough. It. And previously, years ago, Channel 4 in particular had a lot of music output. There was T4 in the morning. They had things called 4Play at night, which were sort of quite late at night, either 5 or 10 minute little sort of video biographies almost, you know, of a new artist to basically showcase them and tell you what they're all about. Mm-hmm. And that all sort of came to an end a few years ago. And they were the main opportunities, those types of things, for newer artists. And when these shows stopped being on air like that, and Top of the Pops, CD UK, it was a lot of slots a week that got taken away. Mm. And as a result of that, a lot of artists that previously wouldn't have done some of the shows that are still on now started doing them because there were so fewer opportunities.
So are there less live music opportunities now, or is it just that it's different shows?
There are definitely fewer opportunities for live music, without a doubt. Sarah Cox has a show every weekend morning on ITV1 that was previously Zoe Ball and previously Alid Jones. Mm-hmm. And that's just been so fantastic for us because it's two performances every weekend. They get to do two tracks fully live. It's a real experience for them. I should mention at this point, on TV, most music that you see is, you know, live vocal to a backing track. Well, not most, but a lot of it. There's not much fully miming these days, but there is a lot of that. And there's lots of reasons for that. Often the artist wants to do it. It's not just the show saying it, but it is often sort of technical reasons from the show, because a lot has to go into a fully live performance and it's just not always possible. So an opportunity to perform fully live these days is great. And obviously later with Jules has been there for a long time and long may it continue. They've just been recommissioned for a number of series.
So, really?
Yes.
Jules and Holland is the pinnacle, isn't it?
It is.
Why does every artist want to do it so badly? Because every artist we look after, it's top of the list, isn't it? It's just, it's the one.
It's such a high level of kudos to get.
Yeah.
And it's is one of the ultimate tastemakers, and it's not just about the slot. They don't have the viewing figures they used to, but it's what it can do for you afterwards as well.
Yeah, and I think it's like a tip of the hat. It's like, you're credible.
Yes.
You're an incredible musician. It's not you're popular, it's you're credible.
Absolutely, yeah. It is. And it's going to remain in demand for that reason. And once again, it's, you know, an opportunity to play fully live. You know, as an artist, they don't usually want to do anything other than playing fully live with a with a band, as they would at a gig. But as I said, you know, it's not always possible on TV shows, and later very, very much want it to be that
live
experience. Yeah. And yeah, so it's a great experience them doing the actual TV, but it is a great thing to have. The later stamp on your project means an awful lot.
Do you have a favourite or a memorable Jules Holland performance?
I had a very special moment with Future Islands.
Oh, cool.
Where I got sort of performed to in the sound check, just directly for the entirety of a song, I should say.
Amazing.
And I was sat just opposite, you know, sort of 15 metres away on a flight case, and there was no one else around apart from the cameraman, and he obviously saw me there enjoying it, fanboying.
Lurking.
being creepy, and just fully delivered his whole usual amazing performance directly at me. It was, yeah, that was a very special
moment. That's pretty cool.
So that was a very good later moment.
Yeah.
And actually, that same show, I had Damien Rice, and he was on with, I think, 8-string players.
Oh, I love Damien Rice.
And it was just him in the middle of the studio with a semicircle of string players around him. And that was, talking about privileged moments.
Yeah.
They were rehearsing before their rehearsal, if you see what I mean, in the tiniest dressing room. And it was, I mean, literally just a little box room and a bunch of string players.
Yeah.
And Damien playing it, and it was just me and his manager in the room, and the sound of that number of strings, and Damien, who is just the most phenomenal talent. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, and that was a very special moment.
I love that. That sounds so cool.
So that's good.
Oh, yeah, that's all right, isn't it? Amazing. No, you're so right. There's so many times where you see a band rehearsing, or let's say you're at a festival and you're watching a band set up or practice, and those kind of things where you get to see artists, it kind of reminds you why you're doing it.
It does. It does, doesn't it? And especially because, so when I was starting out, I thought I wanted to work in A&R, and then working with A&R guys, realised it wasn't for me, really. I wasn't a fit for that job. And I actually found the job that I had the perfect fit with. I just didn't know that at the time. Always envisaged my, whatever I did in music, being sort of very creative, on the creative side, on the, you know, having an input into the actual records.
And how it sounds
and anything like that. And obviously I've ended up in a job that's got nothing to do with that. I get delivered the finished product to work. But as you say, I think I'm just coming back on your point about it reminds you why you do it. I feel I have found the right job for me in music. But those live experiences and those special live moments are the reason. And I feel like they do connect me to why I got into it. Even though I'm not doing creative thing that I imagined, they're the things that remind you of that side of things.
Well, you're not typically in an office with tons of people. You're very much out and about and experiencing the music in a really first-hand way.
Absolutely, you are.
So coming from the management side, you know, for us, every time we release a song, we want to get it on TV. That's just the nature of it. And we think every song we release is the best song ever and we should be on Graham Norton. But it doesn't always work like that. And it's sometimes just one single on an album, or you could release an album and not get any TVs. But how do you deal with the balance of relaying to managers what you can realistically get? And do you kind of have any examples of a moment in a campaign that really made a difference?
For me personally, the key to the whole job and communicating with management and labels and the people that employ us is being really honest. You know, there's obviously certain ways you have to deliver news and things like that, but that's anyone's job. That's just sort of having
personable skills.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, having personable skills. I'm sure there are other people who do my job that aren't as honest as we are, but I can't be, held accountable for overpromising.
Yeah. I think from a management side, it's nice to know, because sometimes you're just constantly checking, can we get it on? Is it going to end? Sometimes you just need to know, sorry, it's not getting on.
That's it. The second best answer you can get is a no, I always say.
Oh.
Because you can, obviously you want the yes, but there's nothing worse than
not knowing.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't know for a very long time. And sometimes when you get that no, it means you can go, right,
let's
moving
move on
from that.
Yeah.
I can focus my energy here. Because I know I mentioned the politics. If, for instance, you know, you're sort of going, oh, we desperately want to get on Graham Norton, but we then can't pitch to certain other shows, or we can sort of test the water, but we can't really go for them until we know what's happening on it. So in those situations, when you don't have lots of time to put your campaign together, it is better to know, get a no, move on, try and get something else.
Yeah, that's funny, because I think a lot of people wouldn't realise that if you get one show, you might not necessarily get another. There's a little bit of competition between the shows.
There is. There's a lot of competition. The politics. I remember when I first got into this job, and it went over my head for a little while. It took me a little bit of time to really understand what the politics were.
Yeah.
Because I was just hearing, right, well, if you do Lorraine, you can't do Good Morning Britain.
Yeah.
They won't follow This Morning.
Yeah.
They won't follow Sunday Brunch. Sunday Brunch won't follow Soccer AM.
And so funny.
Or Saturday Kitchen, you know, and or Sarah Cox. And Graham Norton generally won't follow The One Show, but The One Show will follow Strictly. You know, and it's... I mean, it's
a mad pattern that you can't teach to someone. You just have to learn it.
You do. You have to learn it. Yourself. And it's a giant jigsaw puzzle. And once you get used to it, even if there's a brand new show, they just tell you, oh, we won't follow this, but we will follow that. And it's logged in there. You know, it's not going anywhere. And that's just experience.
So what about a moment where you got to tell someone, we've got you on this show, or do you have any?
Oh, there's lots of wonderful moments.
Even recently, sorry to jump in, but you look after Hannah Grace, and we recently had our first ever solo TV show, and those moments they're so huge and they're so exciting, and you know, you telling us and then us telling Hannah and telling the wider team, it makes such a huge difference. And her getting to perform on TV, you know, and the visibility of that, I think sometimes even for a new artist it can be just as exciting, if not more, than a bigger TV.
It can be. And delivering that news, that's always a good one. The first of a career is always a really, really exciting moment.
Yeah.
And obviously we love Hannah as well.
Oh.
And it was really cool getting that. And Sarah Cox, actually, I know I said previously, we're very thankful for them. And not just because it's more slots on TV, but they are more open to more emerging artists, which is
so important. It's amazing.
It's really important. And it's not always the case with, you know, TV shows. And a lot of the TV shows now, entertainment wise, you know, ITV Daytime, Lorraine, Good Morning Britain, Loose Women, and also BBC Breakfast, they all used to do performances.
Mm.
And now they're very rare. And, you know, they've got their reasons and that's all good. But as a result, they need to just be... It's not just about the track anymore. You know, before, if you had an absolutely incredible track, you'd have a shot on those shows. Whereas now, obviously, with it just being a sofa chat that you'd get, they need to be someone with profile, not just
a good song.
Or an amazing story. You know, that it needs to be something that they can sit and chat to them about for 7 minutes. So that landscape's changed a bit. But like I said, Hannah Grace and Sarah Cox, that was amazing. That was a really nice one. It is a different feeling with artists at different points in their career. And we used to work with a group called The Overtones, and we got them on Dancing on Ice.
Cool.
This is 6 or 7 years ago. And they were doing really well. We'd cleaned up at Daytime, you know, that we were doing loads and loads of TV with them and having a great time doing it. And we just got a sniff of Dancing on Ice. And it took a while, but then they came on board and they did it. And they ended up being on the show the whole way through. They did the promo single, but they also did 6 or 7 snippets to people while they were skating. It was incredible. And the album just shot to, I think it was number 4 in the charts.
Amazing.
And it had previously been, I think it had sort of been around 20 or something in the album chart. And it went to 4 and the album went double platinum. And it could all sort of be fed back to that moment.
That's when
it went crazy. Yeah.
It is that TV moment sometimes that kind of is like, it just crystallises it all together right at that same time. And then, maybe your album drops that week, or that's the week when you get your peak album position.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's been some other great moments. You know, Muse opening the Brits was pretty amazing.
What a moment.
That was quite incredible, which was seriously full on work on the day. There was a team of us, you know, it wasn't just Sarah and I. We got some friends in to help because of, you know, the amount
of Brits,
people.
It doesn't get much bigger than that, does it?
No, and that was an amazing experience. So, yeah, there's lots. But in terms of making a big difference, I mean, the Overtones is the biggest reaction I think we've ever had to a TV. Overtones on Dancing on Ice. It really catapulted them. So that was a very exciting time.
Well, as we've just discussed, TV can make such a huge difference. But we've also touched on the fact that there's less and less of them. What do you see happening in the future of music telly and with this kind of streaming era and Netflix? Do you think those music TV shows are going to survive?
Well, I think we've already been through the worst of it. You know, as I was saying with Channel 4 and the ITV daytimes pretty much stopping having, you know, performances. And it feels like it's leveled out an awful lot. And, you know, people have started watching far less traditional telly. Mm-hmm. And it is catch-up services and it is all that. But
they still watch it.
They still watch it.
Even if it's on catch-up, they're still watching.
That's it. And I think there is still that appetite for TV as we have it. But who knows? The world is changing so quickly.
I know. But it would be a shame. And I hope that we can kind of retain those live music slots because they're rare, but they're so enjoyable to watch.
They are. And I think we will for a while. You know, I don't think they're going anywhere imminently at all. I think, as I say, there was a tough time when a lot of stuff was changing. And every year I find out about this show not existing anymore or this show not doing performances anymore. And there was a point where we were going, my goodness,
what's left?
Are we going to have a job in 2 years? And it has, you know, it has leveled out.
Fingers crossed, Tom. I'm going to hold you to that hopefully music TV will survive.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. It's been so interesting to hear about everything that you do. And we will leave some links to some of the things that you've mentioned, some of the resources in the show notes. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Big thanks to Tom for taking the time to chat to me, and I hope you all enjoyed our conversation. It was so interesting to hear about all the politics of music TV and the strategy that goes into booking artists. I also want to say thank you to Soho Radio, to Juliet at Pineapple Productions, and to Sunny, whose music you have heard on this episode. See you next time.